From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And welcome to the Boomer and the Babe Show. It is Wednesday, September 26, 2012, and we are broadcasting from our studios in Sun City, Arizona. We haven't changed that intro yet, but we're now in new studios in Sun City, Arizona. And I'm Pete Peters, and Deborah Brown is with clients today outside of the office, outside of the building. And she'll be hopefully bringing home a check, bringing a check back to the building. That'd be nice if she did that today. She generally is pretty successful and allows me to just be on the radio and talk with you good folks and our guests that we have on a daily basis. Don't forget that we have Arizona Boomer Radio with the Boomer and the Babe. And that's Monday through Friday at 9 o'clock Arizona time. And then we also have the Boomer and the Babe Show, which is our national show. And we do that at 11 o'clock a.m. Arizona time. So from wherever you're listening, we appreciate the fact that you're there. And I'm Pete Peters, and we invite you also to go to our website, which is boomerandthebabe.com, see what the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated is involved in, truly much more than just a radio show, talk show, and hosts. We are a multifaceted, multimedia marketing company. We publish ebooks, mini-books. We even dabble in promotional products and also a little bit of video work for some of our clients that are here in the greater Phoenix area. As I said, I'm Pete Peters. My guest today is Mr. John Downey. John Downey is a relocation expert, and he's dealing a lot with senior living. And we're going to be talking about when seniors are deciding to move and how they have to take a look at this and downsizing. I think we'll get into a little of that today and so on and so forth, and what their organization does with regard to seniors and their move and their moving on and transition into their lives, into the retirement years. John, welcome to the Boomer and the Babe Show.
Thanks, Peter. It's great to be on the show. I'm sitting in New England, a typical New England day, just about to hit October, and it's cloudy, and we're probably nearing 60-something degrees. I'm assuming it's a little different where you sit today, Peter?
It is. It is a little bit different.
Don't rub it in.
Well, no, I'm not. I mean, there are plenty of days here that we talk to people, and we're sitting here sweltering at 115 and 117, although today I think we're going to be probably about 98 to 100, and that's actually cool. For this time of year, it's beautiful weather, blue sky, little breeze, and a tolerable temperature. Tolerable temperature is the watchword of the day here in Arizona. I will tell you that right now.
We're gonna ask to borrow that a little bit down the road if that's okay.
Yeah, we got plenty of heat to keep your ice away and your snow melting. There's no doubt about that. Well, before we get into the heart of the conversation today, John, I'd like you to give us what Deborah would call, if she were here, your two-minute movie, which is some background information on yourself and what you've done in the past prior to what you're doing now, and then we'll start talking about your projects that you're working on now. But how did you get started in business, in the business world? Where did you go to school? Anything you want to tell us about?
Well, thanks. Born and raised in New England, just north of Boston, and got into what at the time was a great opportunity, and they called it a job for life, which I would dare anybody to find one of those today. It was with New England Telephone Company way back when. And, they had different rules then. They had the government telling guys what they should do and girls what they should do, and you had to mix it up, and there was an opportunity to get in, so I got into the phone company, as they simply called it. And 30 years later, I left, which was about, I don't have to tell you this, do I, Peter? No. about eight years ago, I left what was then Verizon. And I was in advertising sales, business to business. And honestly, I hadn't put a whole lot of thought into the next phase of a career. So I talked to a lot of folks that I had done business with in the past. And the call came in from a great guy, a realtor he's an independent realtor, owned, he and his partner owned an independent company up here in the Northeast. and spent 5 years learning every day and learning a lot about the industry, the ins and outs. And then, you know, a lot of things happen along the way, but I had an opportunity to change companies and to come over to a company known as RE/MAX Prestige. And RE/MAX, as everybody knows, is a national and international franchise with real estate. And I've been here since last October, so it's closing in on a year now. But I love what I do. I love what they allow me to do, which is, you know, a passion. And I don't think I get too many people get a chance to earn a paycheck doing what they love to do.
Well, that's very true. So you are fortunate in that regard. There's no doubt about it. Now, tell me a little bit about when you were working for the your previous and first, I imagine, real estate company. Mm-hmm. You were learning the real estate business through some pretty tough times as far as housing bubbles and all that kind of stuff, weren't you?
Well, I'll tell you, I was hired as director of marketing because the tide had begun to change. And everything that you heard about over the last 8 years had really just begun when I joined their company. So not knowing what they were going to face, they hired somebody. They thought, well, he knows marketing. He knows this. He knows that. He'll make us better. He'll make us grow. Well, ever since the day that I joined the company, of course, the real estate business went sort of spiraled down each and every day. So I really never got to enjoy what we're starting to enjoy now, which is certainly an uptick in the market. You know, every day was a battle. Every day we worked hard to get what we could get. We did a great job under the circumstances, but the market just won. You know, it was a market where values dropped and there was a lot of inventory, and it just became a buyer's market. And so with the economy, everybody's so upside down. And then, of course, the terminology like short sales and foreclosures and all these kind of things took over. And, you know, it just went along with the general economy. And so I think, you know, it was the greatest time. You know, we say in life that we really, you learn more from failure than you do from success.
Right, right.
Well, if that's the case, I'm a genius. I should do really well now.
Yeah, you've got your future clearly laid out ahead of you, and it's all roses, right?
Yeah, I hope so, Peter.
There you go. Tell me a little bit. You brought up the term short sale. Mm-hmm. Foreclosures, I think everybody pretty much understands what a foreclosure is and what happens possibly to your credit and so on and so forth. And I don't know that people fully understand, even though it's bandied about and it's just thrown out like, in Arizona, it's like, well, it's 115 degrees today. Okay, big deal. And so somebody says, yeah, well, we're selling our house on a short sale. What does that really mean? And what does that mean to the person and their credit standing?
Well, a short sale is, you know, the math is fairly simple. It's when you owe more in your house than you could possibly sell it for in the market. Mm-hmm. And so you're, you know, the other term is upside down. And if you want to get out from under, naturally the only way to do it is to sell it. But you're handcuffed, because if it's worth $200,000, but you owe $250,000, well, you're $50,000 in the negative. And what do? So do you make your payments? Do you not make your payments? Do I walk up? Some people have walked away. So, you know, you put the house in the market and you hope that when you get an offer, you appeal to the bank, to the lender. Will they accept that offer and then forgive that debt? So you get $50,000 in debt that our then President George Bush filed a law that became law that said, okay, we're not going to hold that $50,000 against you because we want you to come out of this as well as you can. But in the other case, the banks really didn't want to lose that. So, you know, there is the way you've got a qualified buyer who wants to pay a certain amount. At least you can get that for it. But the banks seem to want more and more and more, and, you know, penalties and things like that. And it certainly, you know, it certainly does affect your credit. It's not as bad as a foreclosure, but, you know, you can't go out and buy a home for several years because it does do damage to your credit. But it does beat foreclosure. And, of course, walking away is just, you know, because you can walk away, but you can't walk far enough.
Right, right. Mm. The abandonment walk away thing has in particular areas here in Arizona has been just almost epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
I know one fellow that was in a home. He had had it for a couple of years, or maybe even, say, a couple of years. And then right around the corner down the street and around the bend, the same building, the same builder was selling his same house for less money than he paid for his, with all the same upgrades and so on and so
sure.
forth.
Yeah.
And there was no way that he could get out of that thing and go buy that house at a cheaper price. Now, not only is he then competing with the general market out there, people selling their homes that they've lived in for a period of time, now he's also competing with his own builder that put him in the house in the first place.
Sure. I mean, we had a lot of developments that, you know, when the houses first in the development, first one on the market, we'll just use a number, $300,000, $350,000 that they were selling for. And then you've got your neighbors now who have invested that kind of money. And the development has to go on, so you're building homes now 4 and 5 years later, but you're putting them on the market for $275,000 or mm-hmm. to $250,000 for the same home.
Mm-hmm.
And your neighbors are saying, oh, my God, what does that say about our values?
Right.
I think it speaks volumes about what you were just saying. But, you know, you just have to hope that everybody holds tight and those values come back as they seem to be. You know, it's no secret that this industry, like many others, it's really based on supply and demand. When there's a lot of houses out there, then, you know, buyers can kind of suffer a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, so, I mean, just the opposite, actually. When there's a lot of homes out there, you know, the prices are cheaper. When you limit the amount of homes, it's harder to find, prices go up, and it becomes a seller's market. And, you know, we're not there yet. Certain markets are seeing it. New England, I think, is a little bit ahead of the curve, but we're getting there. And we had a solid year here at RE/MAX Prestige, the best year in many, many years. And our agents today are running around like crazy, like they haven't done in a long time. And they love it, and they just want it to last.
Sure. So do you think this housing bubble that we had, do you think it will reinflate, or do you think it'll just never be back to where it was and be more conservative and steady growth as it was prior to this crash?
Well, I think lenders will be conservative. Banks will be conservative. People will be more cautious. The government will certainly not let up the rules as they probably did in the past. But, you know, if you could have predicted what just happened, you'd be able to predict what's going to happen. You know, you hope for an increase in value. You hope for good times ahead. But, you know, I'll take a slow, graded increase in values versus
right.
this sudden surge, because those are the ones that don't last. So this was a great year. You know what? If we keep going at this level, then it'll be a long upward and positive trend and something that we really need.
Yeah, I think it was just outrageous that people could buy a house in Arizona, as an example, for $175,000, and through the boon of the housing bubble, and when it was fully inflated, they could take that same house just a matter of very few years later, and turn around and sell that $175,000 house for $450,000. And it's like it was never worth that much in the first place. I mean, these things are made out of sticks and stucco out here.
I know we'll talk more about the boomer stuff later on, but that's where you have to have that insight that says, you know, the good times only roll for so long. And you've just got to keep things as conservative as you can, live a great lifestyle, but to assume that they're going to go up 10%, 20%, 30% on an ongoing basis, it just doesn't last. And I think this one had a big impact.
Well, it reminds me of when I used to sell advertising space for a newspaper years ago, when I worked for a major newspaper. They always wanted an increase, always wanted an increase, always wanted an increase. My territory never grew. There was only so many viable businesses in that area that are going to be able to advertise on a regular basis, and they wanted an increase year after year, quarter after quarter. And it got to the point you have to say, there's nothing out here. He said, well, what we're going to do now is we're going to make the top 25% of your accounts are in our house accounts. Now you got to go replace them. And it's the same kind of a deal. I mean, you build your book, or you build your home value, or circumstances allow you to build your book or your home value, and all of a sudden it gets jerked out from underneath you, and where are you going to go out and find another house in that marketplace that's going to allow you to for any less than what you sold your house for to begin with?
Well, you're probably not. A lot of these people ended up renting.
Yes.
You know, the rental market became huge. People were leaving that expense. Like you said, some of them walking away, and they're getting into a lesser expensive rental. And now people who are still under the blight of a bad market or are not yet improved market, they're choosing to rent their house out instead of selling it, hoping that, you know, a year or two down the year, if they get lucky to have great tenants that keep the house in great shape, that they can then sell the house at a market value that would at least help them out personally in their lives. But renting is, you know, it's an option that people are thinking about more and more now.
Another thing that people were doing out here, and I don't know if they were doing it back there, is they would go, because they knew they were going into the dumper with their house. They just knew it. I mean, the writing was on the wall. They recognized it, and they knew that the housing values were going down. So they would go out and they would buy a second home before they had done damage to their situation. And they would go out and buy a second home for a tremendously lower price than what they had in their own home, and they would be in that house, and then they would walk from their first house.
Well, I don't know. Gosh, I don't know how they wouldn't be, you know, leaned to death, if you will, based on still owing something on a prior home. But you know, sooner or later, I mean, just common sense says it's got to catch up to them. There's a home in their name.
Sure. Sure. I don't know if they were. I don't know if they were taking out an equity loan in another house. I mean, I don't. You know, in order to get into the less expensive home, taking that money, putting it on the lesser home, and then walking away from the high priced one. You know, and they could have almost been very similar homes for that matter, with the way that the prices were dropping like a stone. You know.
Yep. Well, listen. Let's just hope for the generation that would be we're going to be talking about in a few minutes, because as they get older and as they enter into possible retirement or downsizing or whatever, we certainly want this market to pick up so that when they do have to sell their home, they can get you know, a good positive amount that would help them move forward. Though you figure there, what we hear all the time is that, geez, I can't get enough of my house, so I'm not going to sell it. But still, when you think of what they probably paid for it versus what's increased, even with the last 7 or 8 years, they're still doing quite well. It still has, overall, the market has done well historically.
Well, the house that I'm living in right here has become the family home. My mother and father bought this house 35 years ago. They paid $37,000 cash for this house. Now he's added on.
Sure.
And he's enclosed it. He went from a 1,300 square foot house to a 2,000 square foot house, and then when he had Alzheimer's before he passed, we put another addition out back connected to the house, and we put almost another 1,000 square feet back there. So I'm sitting here in a 3,000 square foot home in Sun City, Arizona. I can't get out of it what it once was worth, but I'll guarantee you right now it's going to be a heck of a lot more than $37,000.
Well, you felt the market surge. You're still gonna, you know, you're still gonna do quite well with that. I mean, you never get out exactly what you put into a home. Of course, there are certain areas of your home that, you know, you might get 30 cents on the dollar back. Some areas you might get 80 cents on the dollar back. It all depends on that buyer and what they're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the boomer cohort and getting ready to move and downsizing. I've been talking to a lot of folks on this radio program and all around this various topic that we're going to be discussing now. And sometimes they're saying that they used to always think of going to Florida and Arizona, period, end of conversation. They're going they're going to the Sun Belt.
Yep.
Now what they're doing is they're looking to possibly downsize in the market they're in, looking for different types of amenities and so on and so forth, looking for maybe new active adult communities to live in, to move into areas like that are springing up in the snow belt, for crying out loud.
Sure.
Who'd have ever thunk it, you know? What is that, and how that is that? I guess it's a new way of looking at the housing situation, and how does that involve anything that you're doing?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of reasons that, you know, people choose to move. One, you know, you've raised your children. You now want to get down to a warm climate. And, you know, your children are safe. They're doing well. They're families now. So you think, okay, I'll move to Arizona or I'll move to Florida, where you get exactly what you've bargained for. You know, you're getting warm climate. You're getting a lot of facilities that are probably close. There are a couple of places down there, like the Villages, I think, down in Florida. It's one of the largest adult communities in the United States. And everything's built into the community, stores and doctors and all the, you know, shopping facilities. But then as we age a little bit more, we decide, you know what, this isn't so much fun because I really want to spend this important time closer to my family. So a lot of the boomers and seniors are now moving back to within an arm's reach of their kids. So they're getting rid of that house down south, and they're coming back up. Now the kids could live in it. They could be coming from New England, moving down there where the kids are. But the kids are a big factor in that move. We have, as you know, an upsurge in 55-plus, what we call active adult communities. And let anybody that's listening understand, this is not quiet haven. These active adult communities are exactly what it is. They're very active. They're for generally 55-plus. And the difference is somebody takes care of your property. Snow comes up here in New England, and they take care of it right up to your doorstep. They do your landscaping. They take care of the exterior of the home, et cetera. But they're very active, so the folks get together socially. They go out socially. Some of these places are just amazing to see. And dispel the myth that that's where you go and slow down and you know, rest, because they are very, very active. And I would really encourage anybody who's thinking about that to go take their first look at some of these communities and understand that it isn't a place to go if you want to just sit back and be quiet. These are fun places, a lot of energy. Hey, listen, at 55 to 60, 65, and in most cases way above that, by today's standards, there's a lot of tread left on those tires of life. And,
yes, there is.
You know, there's a lot to be done, and grandkids and great-grandkids. And so 55-plus is great. And then, you know, so we're very involved in helping them make that decision because, you know, the house is and always will be normally the most expensive asset that they have. And it's kind of our belief here in the Prestige Senior Living Division that it takes a specialized agent as well to handle that. You know, we like to think that all of our agents and all the agents across the country are very talented, and they're professionals, but everybody has been trained or experienced in different things, and we like to call on what we call our SRES agents, which is Senior Real Estate Specialists, which is really a designation given out by the National Association of Realtors, by those people who are willing to take a course and study and take a test and then do follow-up tests, because this particular qualification helps them understand the process that a senior is going through, understand their personal, their everything that they're going through at the age of 55, 60, 65, 70, and plus. So they're specifically suited to help these folks at a better level than somebody who, say, specializes in first-time home buyers.
It's very interesting, my listening to you say that, because it relates, there's a direct correlation, I think, between what your agents are probably doing, as I understand it, to what my daughter, who is now 37 years old, did when she is out of college by a couple of years. She has a degree in interior design, therefore she's not an interior decorator, she's a designer, as she said. And she went to work for I want to say Marriott, but I think it's Hilton. It's Hilton. I shared in one of them. I don't know which, but they had these nice new high rises in La Jolla, California, and people were buying these condos high-end stuff. I mean, really high-end stuff. Mm-hmm. But they were doing, and she was involved in helping them choose not whether or not they were going to have granite, but whether they're going to have granite or marble and the grade of granite and marble. I mean, that's how high-end this stuff was. You had to have $1 million in the bank before you even get into this.
Sure. Yeah.
And, but anyhow, they were doing what was called right sizing. And she was helping these people select from their belongings in their large home mm-hmm. the right things that they were going to take and how they were going to fit in their new home.
Well, you know, Peter, that's turned into, as you probably know, it's turned into an industry, a national industry.
Yes. Yes, it absolutely has.
There's an organization. The acronym is NASMM, and it's the National Association of Senior Move Managers that we are certainly a member of, and we actually use their services nationally when seniors do move. But they specialize in, and theirs is a tough job. I call them nurses with boxes. They have to have a relationship with the seniors. The seniors have to control the move. There's no question about that.
Right.
If you try to tell a senior what to do with something, where to put it, what needs to go, you'll be out the door in 5 minutes.
I know.
They've got to, and they should understand that it is their say, but they're so willing to listen and to be coached, but the coaching stops when they make a decision. But these folks, in some cases, they're taking... You know, if somebody, say, is going into an independent living facility, and some of these are, I mean, we'll talk about those, but they're just beautiful. So they might be going from 2,500 square feet down to 500 square feet or 400 square feet. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a job. How do you do that? Imagine the decision-making process going into that.
Exactly. Do you take your twin bed or do you take your double bed?
Peter, I'm not going to let you in the business. I mean, the idea is you've got to think of the end result, that
right.
when these senior move managers are finished, and part of what they do is they take those most precious items and they decorate the new facility with them.
Exactly.
Because what I call is, you know, when they wake up in the morning, like we all do, and we're, you know, in that fog, you open your eyes, they want to see something that reminds them of home. So the mirror on the wall to the right will be on the wall to the right. You know, the bookcase that has the books lined up, the five horizontal books and the six vertical books and the baseball and the vase and all these things that they used to wake up to and live with, these are the things that have to be pointing at them, certainly when they get up in the morning, so that, you know, they're not shocked into, boy, where am I? Why am I here? You know, they bring home into the new living quarters. And they pack up and they arrange the movers. If there are a lot of valuable things, they can call in appraisers. You know, if there are things to be shipped to children in other parts of the United States or out of the country, they can literally box these things and have them shipped. They can take pictures or videos so that kids can choose what they want, working along with the family, ship them out, and so they can again actually move those things or have those things shipped. And, you know, some things are given to charity, some are disposed of, and it's all working with the seniors. And at the end, these folks are cleaning the homes. They've already done the decluttering. And after the move is done and everybody's in the new place, they stage that home for real estate sale so it gets maximum value. So it's really a complete turnkey operation. Thank God that they're out there. There are thousands of them. They are a very, very professional group, and we can put a team together as an example of a senior move manager and a designated senior real estate specialist anywhere in the country within minutes and have that team work with a client that will be moving.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that I learned of this from my daughter who was doing it. These people obviously are... In various stages of mental capacity sometimes, too. This location that she was working with, they had a situation where it was the husband and wife lived together and so on and so forth, and the whole deal. But if one of them gets ill or is having memory issues, then they move that person to the memory care wing.
Right.
And so there's a certain element of dealing with that aspect of senior life that they have to be available and willing to take part in whatever that might be as well. And that is not always easy.
No, and you know, you'll notice, and it's a term that I think I've I use a lot, and I think if it's been used before, I haven't heard it, but you'll be seeing what I call the graying of marketing. And as this generation explodes at the rate of right now 10,000 a day, I think it's by the, you know, the year 2030, one in five will be over 65. So that power and that buying power, you'll see more and more marketing towards that generation. And the buying power is amazing. They control, I think, over 90% of the buying power in the country. And yet today, you know, it certainly isn't yet reflected in the advertising. But these people will be making decisions that, you know, you'll see every day on TV and in newspapers and magazines, and these developments that they're going to be building will be lifestyle developments. They won't resemble nursing homes or places like that. These will be, as this number grows more and more, you'll see these developments and assisted living and independent living facilities built based on lifestyle.
Yes.
You could see an assisted living facility on a golf course or on the oceanfront, or, you know, it's going to be more and more demanding as more and more of these people hit those ages.
And more of these people are going to have a desire to stay and downsize or right-size, whatever the case might be, in the area that they're currently living in. They may not want to move on to another area of the country.
No. Peter, there's a whole industry based on aging in place.
Right.
And it's growing by the minute. There's organizations and contractors out there that they literally their entire income is based on helping people age in place. So you have, you know, in business, there's this, the debate is, and, you know, the war is really age in place versus going into independent living, age in place versus independent living. And, you know, in the open market, you know, they each want to sing their own praises. But I still think, if I had to guess, 80 to 90% of those folks out there, if they can, would like to stay right where they are, enhance their homes so that they can be comfortable living in their homes. Just, you know, widen the doorways and put handles here and put safety things there. You know, there's a whole industry based on that. The only issue is, you know, at some point, it becomes unsafe.
That's right.
And, you know, you just hope to God that there are people out there looking and listening and understand enough that somebody can say to somebody, you know, I know you've lived here and you've set it up to live here, but we see what's going on, and it just may not be the safest place for you.
Well, that hits right close to home here. That's exactly what happened. Deborah and I lived in Southern California, in San Diego, mm-hmm. and it suddenly one of the Christmases when we came back, because we came back here every Christmas, we came back here a couple times a year, but one particular Christmas we knew that my dad was failing with due to Alzheimer's, dementia, so on.
Sure. Yeah.
So at any rate, suddenly it looked as though my mother had been absolutely taken through the ringer. I mean, she just looked physically whipped.
Just because she was.
Well, I know she was.
Yeah.
I know darn well she was.
Yeah.
Because she was stoic and she wasn't going to have anybody else come help her. So I said, we're moving back. And Deborah said, yes, let's go. And so we came back not looking, not knowing what we were going to do. We rented a house, and we were starting to look for a nice, larger home that we were going to be able to have them come and live with us. And my mother, who still was in her right mind, said, well, just move in here and we'll add on to the house. And I went, Well, okay.
Don't ask twice.
Yeah, right. So we sure. did, and that's when we put this additional 975 or 80 square feet in the back, and I designed it, and it's got a living quarter. It's got a kitchenette area right adjacent to the living quarters. It's got a nice bedroom, so that they can put. They had their king size bed in there. Their twin beds put together in there.
There's wonderful.
There's a walk-in closet. She got her own washer and dryer, her own hot water heater, and the whole nine yards. The only thing she doesn't have back there is a stove.
Right.
And they got a shower. We have a shower that has a wide enough area that we could have wheeled my father in there in a shower chair if need be, and a drain in the middle of the bathroom floor in case there was an accident. We could just wash it right down, disinfect it, and wash it right down into the sewer system. And I designed all this stuff based on what I had seen in hospitals and whatever the case might be.
Right, right.
And so now, to make the long story short, he moved back in there. They moved back in there in January, and by that August of the next year, he had already spent 90 days outside of the house because his illness progressed, and he died in August.
Mm.
So now she's got this apartment back, basically his apartment back there, and she's had a he died 3 months later. She has a stroke, and now we're dealing with it again.
Yeah.
And but she has this quarters, but I think the point is that's exactly what you were talking about when people say I will convert some portions of my home so that when this happens I have it ready.
Well, sure, that's again it's just a huge national industry. It's going to get bigger every day, and it should. Because I guess I don't know anybody that would say, gee, I'd rather live in a facility rather than my own home. It's just for some, and by the way, for some that can afford to live in independent living or even assisted living, because it's an amazing and substantial investment for those people. So, you know, you live at home, I say, as long as you can, and when it's unsafe, then you have to make a decision. But you had brought it up earlier, Peter. You have to make the decision, hopefully, in right mind.
Mm-hmm.
I was recently doing a talk at a independent living facility in a nearby town here, and what a wonderful group! I love talking to them because, you know, when folks are making a decision like that, you know, they're generally, I'm going to say, 75 to 85. And personalities don't change. They could have been 25 and 35 or 25. Personalities stay the same regardless of how old you are. And it's just a fun bunch of people to talk to. But a couple of things came up and some things that I learned during those talks. And that is, first of all, these people, they're not always afraid to move. What they're afraid of is to move their world. Because their world isn't empty walls and empty cabinets. Their world is 50, 40, 50, 60 years sometimes of collecting things, right? We all collect stuff.
Right.
And they can't envision that move.
Right, right.
And they're actually afraid of it. And some of them will hunker down in their homes, Peter, because it's overwhelming. So they'll just stay until sometimes it's not safe anymore.
Well, the way it went down here, and I'm not telling any tales out of school because I've discussed this with people before,
mm-hmm.
and that is that while we were trying to while we were in the process of making the decision as to what would we do with Dad, and this was my mother's involved in this decision.
Mm.
You know, what are we trying to do? What are we going to do? Can we afford to put him in a care facility as long as it's being paid for by Medicare? If he needed skilled nursing, then it would be fine. But if we were self-pay, we were going to have to get some help in here, and it was going to have to be hospice care or something. You know,
sure.
But what were we going to do with him? Because it's difficult decisions. So she decided that let's go ahead and let's build this addition that I told you about. And she was of right mind, completely fine with it, and so on and so forth. And we made the decision, and it was almost a relief because now it was a situation where she didn't have to worry anymore with regard to where was he going to go, because
right.
Basically, set. And the other thing that came up in the course of the conversations is, well, when he's no longer with us, I'm glad you guys are here, because I've never been one to live alone. I haven't lived alone for 67 years.
Right.
Why would I want to start now? And that was the way that conversation went. So there's all of these considerations. And anybody such as yourself that's involved in doing this that can help alleviate some of those some of those other burdens and decisions so that they can make their heartfelt decisions with regard to partners and whatever else, and they can make that of with a clear mind. That's it's a wonderful opportunity for them.
Yeah. Well, we had a number of people on at different meetings talk to us clearly about their fear of that move, and we would have occasionally we'd have a guest, which would be a senior move manager, who would step up and speak to them and say to them, senior move managers don't come out on a Monday and you're out of the house on a Friday. They consult with these people and they say, we can do it a bunch of different ways, and by the way, you can do it yourself and I can help you. Most of them do free consultations, and they can guide them as to how to downsize themselves, how to decide what to give away, what to throw away. So it can be a long-term thing that people can do themselves. A senior move manager can take 10 days, or they can take a year on a project. So they don't look to overturn somebody's life. They really look to work with someone so that they can stop the worrying. Because, let's face it, we all worry. But worries get bigger when you're facing a move like that. It's just such a big event. So they take the pressure off by letting these people know that they're in charge, will move at the rate that you'd like to move, and they help with that so much, and there's a lot of relief. A lot of them, from that conversation or those conversations, trust me, they weren't so much afraid of the for sale sign as how do I arrange this big move?
Yeah, it's not the for sale sign, it's the moving truck that scares them.
Yeah. Sure. There's a lot of things. There's where will I go? How will I pay for it? Because these facilities are anywhere between $3,000, $8,000, $10,000 a month.
I know.
And there are a privileged few that, let's face it, that's not a concern. But for most, it's quite a concern.
Well, I know it's a concern in this household. I mean, there's that now as it involves my mother. It's a concern of this household. I mean, my dad has a nice pension from Ford Motor Company that she enjoys the pleasure of receiving every month. She has her Social Security. She's got a positive cash flow in this house as it exists right now, including the little mortgage that we had to take for the build out in the back. And she's got a positive cash flow. But I'll guarantee you right now, whatever she's got in the bank, and even the value of this home, if it were to sell, by the time that mortgage was paid off, she would, at $35,000 to $5,000 in this marketplace, she would be on the street in a heartbeat.
Isn't that scary? Yeah.
It is.
Most folks of that generation, if you will, I mean, in your case, the combination of you living there and helping out, what a blessing. Oh, my God, they are blessed to have you there each and every day, and to help keep help the upkeep and keep the value of the home. So I see, quite frankly, though, changes will happen. I'm sure she feels blessed that you're around and keeping things as steady as they can in the place that she loves.
Right.
This generation that we're talking about, they are the last generation not to turn their equity upside down.
It's true.
I mean, what did they do? They mowed the lawn, they painted the walls, they put up some wallpaper, they took care of the car, and they lived and they paid their bills. Mm-hmm. And they didn't, if the house was worth $200,000, they didn't take $20,000 to go to Europe or $30,000 to buy a BMW. They actually paid their bills, took care of the house, and wanted to retire. And so they have their equity. What's even scarier, Peter, is the generations to follow that will face the exact same dilemma, but they're going to face it without the equity in their home. So they'll be more reliant on the government and things like that, because they won't be able to take $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000, whatever their house is worth, out of it cleanly because they've stolen, lack of a better term, from their equity for so many years prior to that. It's, you know, this generation that's going through it now, it's awful and it's scary. There's a lot of unknowns. But I worry even more about the upcoming one because the finances won't be there.
Exactly. I'm looking at the clock here, and we're coming down to short roses, as they say in the filing.
you don't see the finish line out there in the distance, do you, Peter?
for our conversation, unfortunately, I do. Let's get a little bit more into what it is that you do as a senior living expert. I guess you could call yourself senior living manager for Prestige. What is it exactly that you do in your day-to-day activity?
Sure. Well, I had mentioned some of it earlier. First of all, the ownership company is RE/MAX Prestige, and we have 300 agents here in New England, the largest RE/MAX in New England. And, you know, the prime source for most of our business, of course, comes from our own agents. And we tell them often that it's not just their clients that we need to at least look at that could be in need of senior services. It's the person at the grocery store or the bicycle shop or, you know, the paint store, whatever it is. So keep your eyes open and ears to the ground that when you hear of a situation where somebody's saying, gee, I don't know what to do with my sister or my mom or my Aunt Mary or whatever the case might be, that they can then bring that situation into me. And I can contact, we have companies that we refer to. One of them is called, I'm sure you've heard the name, A Place for Mom.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they will contact the family and talk about so many things, a myriad of questions about geography. Where would they like to live? What kind of lifestyle? What's their medical condition, their physical, their emotional, their mental condition? And then they can put some recommendation as to perhaps some facilities that they can visit. So they're getting some advice that way. There are a number of companies that, you know, we can turn to give that information to these people. You know, we have a relationship with that NASM. We're a member of NASM, so we can help and orchestrate the entire move from consultation right through shipping and mailing and then setting up in the new home. We take care of the entire move through our referral network. There are some cases that these people that are going through transition, maybe their house is on the market and it's sold fast. I mean, we all think of that as a blessing, but where they're moving to may not be ready today. It may not be ready in a week. Sometimes it may be 60 or 90 days. Well, there's a company in our network called Oakwood Worldwide that they have fully furnished apartment living really in most cities across the country. So we have an arrangement with them that they'll talk to these families and see if they can't allow that person to move in to an apartment and live there until the facility, you know, independent or assisted living facility apartment is open. So, you know, we're trying to answer some of the questions that they have and alleviate some of their worries. And again, we have the, as I said earlier, the designated agents, which are senior trained and senior designated agents. So when a situation is brought to my attention where we have to work with a family or the senior themselves or a family of the senior, we can assure them that those people that we have speaking to them on the real estate side, the licensed real estate side, they have credentials to work with seniors, that they have a passion, a desire, and a love to work with seniors and understand it and can take things a little slower and can be better listeners and understand, you know, try to understand exactly what it is that they go through because of the training, the experience, and really the passion they have to help these folks. So, you know, in the future looks, we've got so many things in the future. We'd like to build a system where if somebody wants to age in place in Arizona and we get the call here in New England, we can take care of that. We can assign a contractor to speak to them and consult with them about aging in place at their home there. You know, there's financing situations that come up. Sometimes people want to get into these facilities, but I'll tell you now, for the most part, their equity is in their home. It isn't in the bank. They've done the right thing. They've taken care of their home, but they don't have those retirement packages. They don't have their 401ks from back then. They, you know, they took care of things, paid their bills. Now they're living a little bit less, but they have a beautiful home. That's well taken care of, but that's where their equity is. Well, by today's rules, you really can't do a reverse mortgage or home equity unless you're living in the home.
Right.
And in some of these cases, they could be in a rehab, or they could have the need to get into a facility that opens up. Then how do they get the financing? Well, we're working now with an organization that will allow them to literally use some of the equity in the home to get that first 3 or 6 months paid for at the facility, so that our senior agent can then list and sell that property. And those funds go directly to the facility. And then the payback comes, of course, when the house sells and everything is taken care of. So, you know, we're trying to think we're going to be working with many geriatric care managers across the country who are joining their organization, because they are sometimes the first line. They're coming out and see these people from the communities, community-based organizations, to help them with their care. And they're finding people that need a lot of help, and they notify us as well. So, you know, we think we have a lot of answers. We're going to work to have all the answers. But we think if people have questions that are in these situations when they own homes and need to know, what do we do? How do we get to a facility? I don't know how to get there. How will I move? How will I move my stuff, et cetera? We have networks nationwide that can be put together in a short time with free consultation, and you know, plans can be made with them. And it's so far it's been 25 hours a day, but it's just such a passion, and it's great work. I love doing this every day, Peter.
That's great. So let me just kind of sum it up as I understand it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. But I understand it that what you're doing now is you are handling the real estate transaction aspect of what they're doing. They have a home, it's got equity or not, and you're taking care of that sale and getting as much money out of it for them as you possibly can. But along with that, you're doing all of the other things to help them facilitate a painless move, if you will, into whatever area they're going to be going to. And you may not be the person yourself directly, but you have all these other people that are the experts in those various areas that they may need some help. And that aspect of what you do and what you set up for them, I'm going to assume that those individual service providers have their own rate schedules and fees. Is that correct?
They do. And again, the key thing is, at least at the onset, all these consultations are free. Mm-hmm. The move managers will come out to the home, and they'll take a look, and they'll have the conversations and talk about a plan, but they don't bill anything. It's free consultation, just as any realtor will speak to them, and there's never a fee to consult on the real estate, finding the value of the home on the market today. You know, you look at absorption rates, how long will the house stay in the market at a certain price, and they're fairly exact. And you know what, at that time in people's lives, they just want brutal honesty. They just want to know what's really going on. So that's what these senior trained people, certainly that's what their focus is. You know, we'll get better, but right now we ask, you know, really anybody that's considering or has a loved one or knows a friend that doesn't know their next move, because, you know, we want people to make decisions, like you said earlier, Peter, when they're in their right mind.
Right.
To make clear, concise decisions based on, you know, based on everything being on the table. And you know, that's the key. Don't wait, and don't assume that you have a week or 10 years, because you can certainly start the planning now for something that may not take place for a long time.
Well, and the nice thing about it too is if it's done properly and done over the course of time, as you suggest, and it's not done in haste, it takes some of the emotion, or it lessens some of the emotion, because it's a feeling of doing, I'm doing this right, I'm doing this well, in a well-ordered manner, and so on and so forth. And it helps people be much more, I guess, accepting of the situation that and satisfied with their decisions.
Yeah, because we understand this may not happen.
Mm-hmm.
When we go into these things, we understand that, you know, a lot of things happen. Look what happened in your situation.
Right, right.
Now, your mom and dad, if things are different, they may not have the home appropriate for you to rearrange and to build upon and have you go there and help them out. In a lot of situations, that's not the case. But, you know, we could have been working with your mom and dad, and then they say, oh, you know, thank God my son has decided to bring his wife and family over here, and they're going to help us out. And we say, good luck, God bless you, that's great news.
Right.
But there
right.
are cases where we do, you know, we go out and we help these people make those decisions. And but it's very careful, and it's well thought out, and it's done knowing outright that seniors have to be the authority. They have to make these decisions. We can educate them, but they are not to be pushed around. They're too feisty, Peter.
Well, I live with one.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody, but I live with one.
Don't say it. Listen, nobody hears us now, right? Right.
Oh, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, God love her. She's 89 years old, and she is not capable of some decisions, because she just gets very confused. But nonetheless, if she doesn't think it's right, based on what she remembers it to be, or
then take it off the table.
Oh, it is off the table.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, oh, I mean, here I am, a 65-year-old man that's been on my own and independent for I don't know how many, since I was 20 and 19.
Right.
Yes, mother.
Listen, Peter, still mom.
I know, and I keep telling myself that.
And you said you're 65, and guess what? You are to your mom.
I'm her baby
you're
boy.
Still, you're a little boy. You bet. You know what? Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, it is. In its own way, it really is. There's no doubt about it. So
yeah.
But you know, and it's nice that I had a great relationship with my dad before he died, and we had some nice talks before he passed. Even though he was not in his full mind, he let his feelings be known, and it's that way to a great degree with my mother also. So I'm blessed to have that opportunity.
No, you are, and you know what, Peter? It's one of the reasons it's been so nice chatting with you is because you're sitting in the chair. You know, there's every aspect of this that you understand,
yeah.
that you get, and you know, that's one of the things that we really try to push for as far as people helping us, is that people who somehow have experienced it or lived it, because it's a side of life that you've, you know, it just helps so much if you've been through that.
Every
mm-hmm.
day we wake up and we have it every day.
Yeah.
Well, John, this has been a very great and a very fast hour, and I do appreciate you taking your time to visit with me today.
Well, it's been my pleasure. This is a passion of mine, and I know that you know, hopefully there's some folks that will hear this that understand that there are resources out there that they may not have thought about, but they need to at least look things up, listen, ask people. You know, contact people, certainly contact us. Anywhere in the United States, we can put teams together that can give a call to you and show you that they care, and show you that they, you know, the first thing to do is to answer your questions.
Well, why don't you go ahead now, take this opportunity to do as I told you, you would be able to give us your shameless self-promotion with regard to how to contact you and anything you want people to know about how they can get hold of you and facilitate some information to be changing hands.
Well, great. Thanks very much. I do believe that we're the only specialized real estate force in the country right now, and I'm proud to be part of REMAX and proud to be part of Prestige Senior Living. And I want everybody to know that if they have questions, and these questions can be slated for something that may happen 5 years from now, or they could be slated for something from 5 weeks from now, but please give us a call. You can call us direct at 1-877-871-3311. I would ask you to ask for me. It's John Downey. I will promptly return your call. It's 877-871-3311. Our website is prestigeseniorliving.net. That's prestigeseniorliving.net. But I will be happy to put a team together to give you a call anywhere in the country. But I will ask those folks that know somebody that they are worried about, that they're concerned about, that they think maybe that's not a great place for them to live. Maybe they're unsafe, or they hear a conversation, as I said earlier, what do I do with mom or Aunt Mary or Uncle Fred or whatever it is, because decisions have to be made, and they're huge decisions. And don't undermine or underestimate how big they are. You know, when you're younger, you understand you can go someplace, pack up, and come, go back and go on with your life. These are big moves, and they need to be treated as such. And, you know, we get it. We understand it. Most of us have lived it. And total respect for that generation and admiration. And we'd love to work with you. So 1-877-871-3311. You can call and ask for John Downey. I'll be more than happy to contact you personally. Visit our website, REMAC. It's prestigeseniorliving.net. And we look forward to helping anybody that's under this thought that it's just too much. Well, it isn't. We can help, and we look forward to it.
Well, John, I want to thank you again for spending the time with me today. I'm going to give you a call at the number that's on my switchboard here. As soon as I close off this show, there's a couple things I wanted to mention to you about some things we might be able to do from this point forward with this conversation that we had. So I'll talk to you shortly. And again, thanks for being on the show with me today.
Well, thank you, Peter. Thanks for the invitation, and thanks for being a great host for your show. You make them proud. You're doing well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks.
Take care.
And goodbye.
Have a great day.
You too, sir.
And that was Mr. John Downey with Prestige Senior Living. If you're interested in finding out more about how you can help mom and dad, aunt and uncle move into more appropriate quarters and all that's involved to go along with that, please give them a call. The numbers are all there, but you can go to prestigeseniorliving.net and ask for John Downey, and he'll be able to help you out. Thanks again for listening to us today, and we'll be off again the rest of this day, but we'll be back tomorrow, two shows. The Arizona show tomorrow is straight down the middle with John Bloom. We're going to do some golf talk on our internet golf show here on Arizona Boomer Radio. And then in the afternoon, we have a lady by the name of Michelle Howe, who is an author, and we'll talk about some of the things that she's involved in and some of the things that she's been writing about. So thank you very much, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day. And we will talk to you tomorrow at 9 o'clock for Arizona Boomer Radio and at 11 o'clock for the Boomer and the Babe Show. Have a great day, everybody.
Boomer and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.